Hello everyone, herb lovers, sustainable health seekers, herbal medicine fans. Welcome back to Herbcast, our podcast from Herbal Reality. In every episode, we explore how traditional wisdom and up-to-date herbal science can meet the needs of the hour and support a sustainable and effective approach to our health. As you know, herbs have nourished human health for thousands of years, and whilst they hold so much potential to meet today's numerous health challenges, there are still so many questions to be answered. And we're delighted to have you with us today as we continue to deepen our understanding together. So get comfy, pour yourself a cup of herbal tea, and let's begin. Today's episode is hosted by Marion McConaughey.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Herbcast. Today I'm talking to Nadia Bryden about caring for women with cancer. Now, Nadia has trained in multiple different disciplines, Western herbal medicine, TCM, naturopathy, reflexology, raw food and juice fasting, to name just a few. She also has a master's degree in public health nutrition and worked for 20 years at Breast Cancer Haven in London. Unfortunately, Breast Cancer Haven has now closed down, and Nadia moved to Wales, where she opened up the Kwimdu Retreat.
Well, welcome, Nadia. Really lovely to speak to you today.
Thank you, Marion, for inviting me. I'm just thrilled to be with you today.
It sounds like from your long list of things that you've achieved in your life that you're on a bit of a mission, a lifelong mission of learning. Do you think you've got where you need to get to, or are there still more things that you're exploring?
I don't think one ever stops learning, really. But I think I've stopped my formal education, and it's now really kind of learning from life now. I think I've got enough expensive wallpaper, as I call it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So what first led you to working with women with cancer?
Well, really it all started when I was diagnosed myself with cancer when I was 33 with cervical cancer, and I decided to try healing myself with using the Gerson therapy, which is a therapy created by Max Gerson in the 1950s. And it's drinking, it's really a detoxifying system using a lot of juices and coffee enemas. And I went to a clinic in Mexico for that. And then I ended up living in a croft in Scotland, exercising and meditating and doing yoga and wheatgrass juice and the Gerson therapy. And after 18 months, I felt better, healthier, happier than I had ever felt in my whole life. And basically, I'd healed. And I thought, well, I really wanted to dedicate my life to actually giving back what I'd received. So I decided to train in Western herbal medicine and at the College of Phytotherapy in Sussex. And sort of one thing led to another. And then I trained in other things such as Chinese herbal medicine and acupuncture and naturopathy. But I think really when you've had an experience of, you know, your own health issues, it's something that you kind of understand on quite a deep level. And so somehow or another, I just sort of gravitated towards helping support people with cancer. And that's, you know, not necessarily people who went down the road that I went down, and I don't advocate, you know, my road necessarily. We all have our own individual way to heal our life. But I then worked at Breast Cancer Haven for 20 years, which is supporting women with breast cancer, whether, you know, who've been going through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and surgery, and really sort of helping them to get over the side effects of the treatment, but also to rebuild their life back again, and to help support them. And support is such a huge thing for anybody with cancer, not just for the person, but also for the family involved. And at Breast Cancer Haven, we supported not just the person who had cancer, but we supported the family as well, you know, sisters, brothers, parents, children. It's a very important thing to actually involve the whole family in the healing through that process. Yeah.
And at Breast Cancer Haven, were you using a mixture of many of the different modalities that you just covered there, or what sort of?
Yeah,
well,
I was just one of many practitioners, because the thing is that people need different modalities, and we offered herbal medicine. And what I initially I was helping with herbal medicine, and I also did massage and reflexology and aromatherapy, and I did nutrition classes for smoothies and juices. And so, you know, I did a number of those things, but we had lots of different therapists who were doing mind-body therapies, counseling. We had another, Alex Laird, who's a very well-known herbalist, and she was there. And then we had another acupuncturist, Christopher Woodward, who was also very well-known. And we had an amazing mind-body therapist, Gosha Gorner, and we were all together for about 20 years. So we were one big, happy family. And we had offered yoga, meditation. Carolyn Hoffman, Dr. Carolyn Hoffman, who does mindfulness meditation, and she also was head of research as well. And we offered so much variety for people at any stage, in group ear acupuncture, just so many things were available. And it's just so tragic that it's no longer available, because unfortunately it didn't last due to COVID, which, you know, many charities didn't, because they didn't have the financial support.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned research there. Was there much research produced by the therapist?
Yeah,
there?
I was involved in an acupuncture study looking at acupuncture for hot flushes. And we did have a lot of research going on. And Dr. Marie Polly was also involved at Westminster University as well. So there was a lot of, you know, evidence base going on behind the scenes to just sort of, you know, make sure that what we were doing was really effective.
Yeah, great. That sounds really interesting. And now you've got your amazing retreat in Wales. Are you still mainly working with women with cancer?
Well, I'm a medical herbalist and an acupuncturist and nutritionist and naturopath, and, you know, anybody who comes through the door with any particular thing that they need help with. But for some reason, I have been quite well known for supporting people with cancer. And, you know, it's not that we can actually heal cancer, but we support people who've got cancer and are challenged by cancer in some way or another. I do see a lot of people who've got cancer, and they're either going through conventional treatment or they've decided to do their own thing. But many different people choose to do whatever feels right for them to do.
Yeah. It must be quite an emotional time. Do you find that you're supporting women as much with emotions and the psychological impact as much as the physical symptoms and the physical side effects from the treatment?
Well, the thing is about, you know, somebody with cancer is they really need a team around them, and I don't have all of the skills for everything that people need, and I have various colleagues who specialize in particularly sort of counseling or psych K or tapping, or, you know, the emotional, that really helps support the emotional side of things. And I've got a particular colleague I referred to, Fiona Shikila Burns, who's very well known for the helping people with the emotional side of things. Obviously, when somebody comes to me, you know, I can help support them emotionally, but for specialist emotional stuff, that's not something that I do. My particular passion really is nutrition, as well as acupuncture. And I mean, the whole thing really, but that's where I seem to have sort of channeled my energies really, particularly is the nutritional side of it, and the detoxification afterwards. Nutrition is just so important as a foundation to support the immune system, and the immune system really is what heals our body. And it's really important to have that foundation. And so that's really where I kind of feel that I, if you like, shine when I'm supporting people.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got your public health nutrition masters and many qualifications to support that. What are some of the key pieces of advice that you give people about nutrition when they're undergoing treatments?
Well, I mean,
cancer?
The interesting thing is when people are going through chemotherapy in particular, chemotherapy causes quite a lot of changes to one's taste, to one's appetite. And interestingly enough, a lot of people find that actually all they want to eat is junk food. You know, they're not interested, or they're not so much not interested in healthy food, but they just don't feel able to eat healthy food. And so I, believe it or not, say to people, well, get through the chemotherapy as best you can. But I do try and recommend that people try and have a vegetable smoothie or some juices every day, because the thing is they really help to rehydrate. And chemotherapy is very dehydrating, and so it's really important that people keep hydrated, obviously drinking lots of water and herbal teas. But I really think that that smoothies and juices actually help hydrate intracellularly, and that's really important, because one of the things that I really noticed was that people would be drinking loads of water, they would actually have quite a lot of edema, but they'd be really thirsty and they were still dehydrated because they were waterlogged extracellularly and dehydrated intracellularly, because they weren't actually able to get that water intracellularly inside the cells. And I think that one of the most important things is vegetable juices, like cucumber juice and celery juice and carrot juice. It's really important because you have very high minerals, but naturally in vegetables, and it really helps to rehydrate. And that's really probably one of the fundamental things that people really need to address is their dehydration during chemotherapy.
So just putting back all of those nutrients and the ions, the sort of sodium and potassium and things like that will just draw the water into
absolutely.
The cells.
And because, you know, and it helps with memory. It just, you know, to be properly hydrated, and it kind of creates, if you like, structured water in the body, and that's really important. And just drinking water, it doesn't necessarily rehydrate one.
And do you ever use any herbs in the juices? Herbs like cleavers, for example, are lovely to add to
absolutely.
A juice.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you know, when you're going through chemotherapy, sometimes keeping things really simple, because I think people feel overwhelmed, that they have no energy. And I don't like to sort of kind of complicate people's lives too much with making it too complicated. And really what I try and do is suggest that people have a smoothie and put the herbs into the smoothie, and starting off like cucumber and celery as a base, but putting dark leafy green vegetables like rocket, lettuce. You know, lettuce has got an opiate, it's very relaxing, it's very soothing. And cucumber is very cooling and very hydrating, because people going through chemotherapy often have a lot of hot flushes, they get overheated, because chemo is very acidic and it creates quite a lot of kind of inflammation and heat in the body. And so the cucumber is actually incredibly useful. And so, I mean, cleavers, but I'm much more of a fan of trying to use fresh herbs rather than tinctures. So, yes, putting powders into smoothies. And I think things like the superfoods like chlorella and spirulina and blue-green algae are really important. And things like moringa and particularly kelp, powdered kelp, because the thing is, with most people with cancer, their thyroid isn't functioning very well. And so it's really important, I think, to help with the thyroid. And obviously vegetables and things like the purple berries, like blackberries and blueberries are very, really important to put in smoothies as well. But one of the most important herbs that I like to use, which I sort of feel that herbs should be used as a food, is fresh dandelion leaves. And you can get those more or less throughout the year. It's during January and February, it's not quite so easy. But the fresher that you can, with the herbs, the fresh herbs is really where I feel is most important, rather than, because you've got the life force. And actually, it's the electromagnetic energy of the smoothies and the fresh herbs, because that's really where we're going to get our energy from. And you know, to veer away from processed foods as much as possible. But it's... It's very difficult during chemotherapy, but to support people, particularly after chemotherapy, with trying to rebuild that nutrition, the nutritional balance and their energy, because it's very hard. One of the other things that people really suffer from is poor sleep during chemotherapy, whether it's because of the stress or whether because it's the dehydration or the chemo. But sleep is really important to try and maintain as good a sleep as possible. And actually, green smoothies with spinach, kale, but the thing is, not too many strong vegetables, because a smoothie that sort of tastes too medicinal is quite hard during chemo.
You want it to be a bit enjoyable as well.
Yeah.
So during chemo, you'd focus on really food-like herbs and adding them into smoothies and things like that. Do you change tack a little bit for building up after chemo has finished, for example?
Yeah, well, chemo lasts about 6 to 8 weeks after finishing chemo. And so really, if one's going to want to sort of do some kind of detoxification, you should really wait until after the chemo's, gone through the system. So probably 2 months afterwards. But I think that it's so important to have, if possible, every day a big mixed salad, because with lots of colour, with, red peppers and carrots and beetroots garlic is really anti-cancer, really important, and lots of lettuce and rocket and I'm not saying that people should be eating raw food 100%, but as much raw food as possible, and not to overcook food, because you're reducing down the micronutrients, because the body is so lacking in nutrition during chemotherapy, because it really does drain the body of vitamin K, folic acid, vitamin D, calcium. I mean, a lot of people who are my particular speciality really was breast cancer. But, all the clients, the patients, we would call them visitors actually at Breast Cancer Haven, would be all on vitamin D and calcium, because that would be particularly low. And so things like chlorella are really important for vitamin D actually. Although it's vitamin D2, it does get converted to vitamin D3 in the body. And I found that chlorella was one of the most important things during chemo, and certainly afterwards as well.
Yeah. Are there any herbs or foods that you avoid using, either when people are undergoing chemo or radiotherapy or at other times?
Well, I mean, the thing is when you're going through chemotherapy, it should be as simple herbs like nettles, peppermint, chamomile, things like that, not to be too complicated with the herbs. And also, there's contraindications, and I think it's really important to try and keep them as much as possible during chemo to food-based culinary herbs as much as possible, rather than conflicting with the chemo. And I used to give Chinese herbs and quite complicated herbs, which worked actually very well. But then the medical profession has changed, because I mean, I've been practicing for sort of like 30 years, and 30 years ago, there was no opinion about herbs, taking herbs during chemotherapy, in that they consider not to really be doing very much. But, you know, now times have changed and contraindications are, you know, quite something that's really important to kind of be quite up on what one should and shouldn't have. So, I mean, really, it's, I would keep to culinary herbs as much as possible during chemo, and simple herbs like chamomile and peppermint.
And how about herbs like turmeric and rosemary? Because obviously they're they're quite food-based.
All
there's
of,
sorts
all
of
these,
herbs that you would add to food.
I mean, all food-based herbs, I would say, are absolutely fine. And turmeric, you know, turmeric and ginger, you know, having something like a ginger shot with turmeric, apple and ginger first thing in the morning really is quite uplifting. Because one of the things is you know, when you've got cancer, it's really better not to drink any alcohol, not to have any coffee, to really have reduced processed foods as much as possible. And so something like an apple and turmeric and ginger shot really helps to sort of wake up the digestive fire and the digestion. And it's really anti-cancer and really important, I think, to have something every day, and, you know, fresh ginger tea and using fresh herbs rather than dried herbs or tinctures, I think, is much more effective.
Yeah. So Kerry Bone recommends avoiding all NRF2 promoting herbs during chemo or radiotherapy, or particularly chemotherapy, because of the mechanism of their action. Have you come across that? And what's your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I just do think that you know, when you're going through chemo, to concentrate on supporting the body with the side effects, with, you know, very sort of food based, and not to have really any conflict with anything else. It's to keep it simple.
Yeah.
Hi there, it's Sebastian here. If you're enjoying this episode, you might like to know that there are plenty more herbal insights on our website. Come and discover more on the science, tradition and practical use of herbs at herbalreality.com. You can check out some of our special sections, for example, our foraging area, showing you how to correctly identify and harvest wild species. And then in our recipes section, you can learn ways of turning them into some delicious and effective health solutions. And for the researchers amongst you, we have regular reviews of research articles dissecting the detail and bringing you the relevant insights. You can also sign up for our newsletter for plant-powered wisdom delivered straight to your inbox. Right, let's get back to today's conversation.
And are there any specific treatments or herbs that you would use to support people who are undergoing radiotherapy? I've sort of seen research on things like calendula and aloe vera topically that can help to reduce those sorts of side effects. Are there any others?
Or? I mean, definitely, without question, is aloe vera is really useful, really important. And, you know, it's a food. And so, as I say, anything that's really a food-based remedy, I think, is very, very safe to use. But interestingly enough, I've sort of reminded of that one of the side effects of radiotherapy can be a frozen shoulder, and one of the most important things really is green smoothies during radiotherapy, particularly to offset the side effects of the sort of inflammation, and it really helps to cool the body down and to protect the body, you know, the rest of the body against the radiation. And it just, I'm reminded of when I had a client at Breast Cancer Haven, and she had got a frozen shoulder following chemotherapy, and she'd had a steroid injection, she'd had acupuncture, she'd had painkillers, she'd had Zopiclone, she'd had everything that you could imagine, and she was really desperate because she only had 20% movement after 6 months of radiotherapy, and so I said, well, would she be amenable to trying a green smoothie? And in the green smoothie, you know, I would put put 80 grams of cucumber, 80 grams of celery, and 80 grams of dark leafy greens and 40 grams, I think, of rocket. And then there was some chlorella in there. There was some ginger in there, a little bit of garlic, a garlic clove. And what else was the some either lemon juice or lime juice. So what I'm trying to do is to create the six tastes, you know, sweet, sour, bitter, astringent, pungent, and acidic. And so you've got all of those six tastes in, but you've also got the fiber, because, you know, every part of a plant is a mirror image of the body. And so, you know, what you've got in a green smoothie is you've got a lot of chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is the equivalent of, if you like, in the human body, heme, which is the red colouring of blood. So you've got the green colouring of the plant, of the blood of the plant, which is actually helping to alkalize and to reduce down inflammation. But then you've got the fiber of the plant is the structure of the plant. And so, for instance, if you've got a joint problem, you know, like a frozen shoulder, it really helps to reduce inflammation. And because the fiber is the equivalent really of tendons and ligaments and the bones, because that's what the plant is holding up the plant. And so I remember saying to this client, giving this recipe, I mean, just very simple with the six tastes, because cucumber is actually the sweet taste because it's a fruit, but people don't think of it as a fruit. But I say to people not to put fruit in a green smoothie, but to keep it vegetable based. So you've got the sweet taste, which is the cucumber. Then you've got the sour taste, which is the lemon or the lime. The salty taste is there's a lot of sodium in celery, for instance. So the salty taste, the bitter and astringent taste is green leafy vegetables have the bitter and astringent taste. And then you've got the pungent taste with the ginger or the garlic. But anyway, so I said, you know, how much water was it? Sort of 300 to 600 mils of water, and blend it up very, very finely in a smoothie maker or a blender. I remember this was the first time that I started using green smoothies on clients. And 2 weeks later, she came back through the door. I was standing in reception, and she was this huge, great big smile, and she raised her arm all the way up to the top. And I said to her, "How long did it take for your arm to the pain and the movement to start to be restored?" And she said, "Only after about 2 or 3 days." And I'm so excited by this. I thought, wow, this is amazing, because I'd had experience of doing this on other patients, on clients, and in fact on myself. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I started giving it to more and more people and getting unbelievable results. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to do a clinical study. So that's why I did the master's degree in international public health nutrition, purely because I wanted to do a clinical study in green smoothies. I used type 2 diabetics as my participants. And the results were amazing. I really need to publish it. I haven't published it yet. But it was amazing. So really, sometimes just keeping things really simple, like having a green smoothie, but understanding the philosophy of why you're putting in each vegetable. So, for instance, if people have got a lot of constipation, they can put linseeds in, or some slippery elm in, and beetroot in, which is all really good for constipation. Yeah. If people have got poor sleep problems, one of the best things, believe it or not, is lettuce and fennel bulb. Fennel bulb is really good for sleep. And I find that makes a huge difference. And I, you know, can put some skull cap in, for instance, but I usually use powdered skull cap, and other things. And then if people have got hot flushes, as an example, it's really amazing for hot flushes. But for people with hot flushes and a lot of inflammation, I use low histamine. So I don't use things like avocado or spinach or things that actually have high histamine, because I've found that people who have a lot of skin problems or hot flushes or hormonal problems actually really, really benefit from low histamine. So I've had amazing results from just people being on low histamine over a weekend, and they have, you know, 20 hot flashes, and in 3 days they've got 2 hot flashes and then no hot flashes. And it's, you know, and it's just food. It's really amazing how you can change things really quickly with food.
Yeah. It's very powerful to suggest to people just to add one single thing into their diet to overhaul and make a positive difference. I think that's quite enticing. Do you recommend any other particular macro levels? So, for example, do you consider the sort of carbohydrate, protein, fats ratios that people are eating as well?
I mean, one of the fats that I think is really important if you've got cancer is linseed and linseed oil. Mm. But the thing is about linseed oil is you know, if you buy linseed oil from a shop, it's very often been in the shop for like a year or, you know, the thing is, it's really important to get fresh linseed. And because, you know, from the pressing date to the best before date is only 2 months, and it must be kept in a brown bottle in the fridge. And you know, people think, oh, well, I must have linseed oil. And they say, oh, it's got a really bitter taste and it's really quite unpleasant. And actually, that's because it's gone rancid and it's oxidized. And so it's really important to actually buy fresh linseeds and fresh linseed oil from sellers. And I particularly, I get mine from the linseed farm, and you know, they literally press it and then post it, and then you put it in the fridge for the last 2 months. Mm. But it's really important to kind of understand that things like fresh foods and oils particularly, they do oxidize very, very easily from heat, oxygen and light. And really one should keep oils in the fridge. So it's not just about keeping a balance of oils, but it's about what oils, which oils to have. And the other thing that I'm really, really keen on is not cooking with oil, and that people should be water frying. And so what you do is, if you're making, for instance, a soup, and where you would, sweat onion in a pan with a little bit of oil, you sweat the onion with a little bit of water and say, you know, just putting like 100 mils of water with and sweating the onion in that. And then if you want to have oil in it, you put the oil in at the end without heating it. And so if we are cooking with oil, I would not use, I would not heat any other oil other than ghee or coconut oil. And you know, you can use olive oil, but just very, very low temperature heating. But because the thing is that it completely changes the molecular structure when you heat oil. And so the oils that we have should be raw and not cooked. And that is really important. And I don't think people realize that. Now, I actually teach on the Natural Chef course at the College of Naturopathic Medicine. And we always try and explain to our students that it's really important not to cook with oil other than ghee or coconut oil, and to put the oil in at the end and have fresh oils and keep them in the fridge.
And so ghee and coconut oil, are they better because they're less likely to change structure?
Yeah, they're much more stable at high temperatures, whereas, you know, fresh oils like linseed oil and olive oil. And the other thing is avocado oil is a little bit more stable.
So some people avoid all sugars when they're in treatment for cancer, and there's the whole theory of the metabolic approach to cancer. But that kind of seems to conflict a little bit with juice-focused diets. What are your thoughts on that? And does that cause a problem with people coming to see you with preconceived ideas about what they should and shouldn't be doing?
Well, the thing is that, you know, it's funny what you've just said, because people think of juices as being fruit juices and smoothies being fruit. And it's like, no. Juices are vegetable juices. They're green or they're, you know, purple, they're beetroot and carrot and kale. And you know, when I think of juices and when I'm talking about juices, I'm actually talking about vegetable juices. I am definitely not talking about fruit juices and fruit smoothies, because if you go to, you know, a juice bar, you know, it's always about fruit. And no, that is not a good idea. No, because the thing is cancer grows from fermentation, and it loves sugar. So it's an anaerobic process. And the thing is that we should be avoiding sugars, but it's not, you know, fruit to a minimum, but not having any processed sugars whatsoever. It's really important to try and keep things, in the sort of the bitter and astringent taste range rather than the sweet taste range. So, yeah, we should not be having sugars. And if we do, it should be only natural sugars. And so things like sort of coconut blossom sugar, but also unprocessed, definitely unprocessed, and using fruit as a sweetener and dried fruit, fresh fruit, and not using sugar. None of us should be using sugar, because it just creates havoc in our gut and creates fermentation. And no, it's not a good idea. It's an addiction. And the thing is that actually the bitter and astringent taste does cancel out the sweet taste. And I do find that with green juices and green smoothies, when people have one for breakfast every day, their desire for the sweet taste completely reduces. So when I see somebody and they come to me, really what I do is I prescribe a green smoothie, and in that I will put herbs, some culinary herbs or whatever in it. And I very rarely in an initial consultation actually tell people not to eat certain things, because when people start eating, adding in a green smoothie, what it actually does is it changes people's consciousness and it changes people's food choices. And when they come back 2 weeks later, or I speak to them in 2 weeks, they say, oh my, I stopped wanting to have chocolate, or I didn't want my alcohol anymore. And so it is really interesting, because people don't want to be told not to do something. It's much better to focus on the positive, because people don't want to think, oh, I've been doing it all wrong. I don't want people to feel that they've been doing something wrong. But what I'd like to do is to focus on the positive and to put a positive message in. And it is quite amazing how the negative actually falls away by itself very often.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like we should all be having green smoothies every day.
We should. Yes, definitely. In fact, I have my green smoothie here, and I really can't actually live without my green smoothie. And if I don't have a green smoothie, I really notice the difference in my memory, in my physical being, in my energy, in my sleep. I mean, it is miraculous. I cannot emphasize it more. It's miraculous. It truly is. It's so simple, you know. And this was the amazing thing when I trained as a medical herbalist. I thought, you know, what I want is I want people to be able to do something themselves rather than me giving them a herb or a homeopathic remedy or, you know, whatever. I wanted to teach people how they could actually go to a shop, cost virtually pennies, and change their whole lives and, you know, their health. And so I'm very, very grateful that I fell upon green smoothies 20 years ago.
Yeah, wow. Well, our time is coming to an end. My final question to you was going to be, what sort of one dietary or lifestyle recommendation would you make for all women? But it sounds like we've already covered that with green smoothie. So are there any final bits of advice that you have to offer either people undergoing treatment for cancer or those supporting them?
Well, I mean, the thing is, cancer isn't just about food. It's about lifestyle. It's about, life purpose. It's about our social interactions. It's about exercise. It's about happiness. It's about, the biggest trigger for any issue, whether it's cancer or whatever, is stress, is to learn how to de-stress. And the thing about green smoothies, chlorophyll has a molecule of magnesium, and magnesium is nature's tranquilizer, it's nature's Valium. And, so we need to be eating more green vegetables, which gives us more magnesium, which helps to reduce our stress levels. But to, hug a tree, hug a friend, keep it simple and try to manage and to resolve stressful situations. And I think stress is the biggest thing. It's not about herbs and diet, and it's really about de-stressing. And that's the key, really, to a happy life, really, to be relaxed.
Yeah, this is coming up time and time again in this series on women's health, that stress is one of the key things to get under control. So thank you very much for your time. It's been lovely talking to you, Nadia.
Oh, Marion, thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure, and thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. We hope today's conversation has planted a seed of inspiration and deepened your understanding of herbal medicine, even answered a question or two. Please do subscribe to Herbcast wherever you're listening to this right now, and you'll be sure to never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. As they say, learn something, teach something. It really helps us to reach more people and spread the good herbal world. You can also use a podcast review to share your comments and feedback about Herbcast, or perhaps make a suggestion for a future episode. It's always great to hear your views. If you can't wait till the next episode, you'll find plenty more herbal insights and all the previous Herbcast episodes on our website, and of course on social media. All the links you need are in the episode show notes. Until next time, take care, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. Bye for now.